Hey yo, what's up world? This is DJ JS1 of the legendary Rocksteady Crew. And right now, you're listening to The Library with my man, Tim Einenkel on rapstation.com. Strictly the real hip hop. Peace.
Ladies and gentlemen, players and chicken heads, my name is it's my buck, a.k.a. Mr. E. Tonight we like to introduce the main man, the man on the stage. His name is Rozell, place to be. We came to tell everybody that when we rock the house, there is no doubt.
There's no doubt.
Them high and mighty boys will turn it out.
Turn it out.
We're down. We're the DJ Mighty Ma, and you know that we get high, and you should not.
My next guest is simply a true artist. He has the ability to showcase his talents not just rap, but in reggae, drum and bass, house rock, R&B, and other genres of music. He's a former member of The Roots. We all know him as the Godfather of Noise. He joins me from Brooklyn Bowl in Brooklyn, New York. Rozell, thank you so much for joining me on
thank
The
you.
Library with
thank
Tim
you.
Einenkel.
If your mother only know, if your mother only know, if your mother only knew that you was trying to get with me, if your mother only knew, if your mother only knew.
So I want to start from the beginning.
Yeah.
When did you start this whole artistic process? I mean, how did it begin for you?
I mean, for me, it's always been an outlet, you know, because growing up in New York, you know, like in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, the Reagan era, it was really bad. So, you know, beatboxing and hip hop was pretty much an outlet for me just to it kept me out of trouble. You know, so kept me focused on other things, which was my creativity.
Did the schools embrace that at the time? You know, I mean,
not at the time. At the time, I think most of the schools were more sports driven. You know, football, baseball, you know, volleyball, you know, things like that. But as far as like, you know, I mean, they had the band, but the band was mainly for the athletes. You know, so. Wasn't really a lot of music courses back then. You know, wasn't really too many programs that educated you on music. So basically, we got our knowledge for music from the DJs that played in the parks. So that was our schooling. That was our education. You know, listening to the DJs that would come out in the parks on the weekend.
So was that? I mean, you know, everyone, you know, they say hip hop started out in the Bronx, right?
Right.
But you grew up in Queens.
I grew up in Queens. Yeah.
So, what is your story? What is the when all this was happening in the Bronx?
See, my backdrop on the story, as far as hip hop is concerned, is the Bronx was the first to record, to actually put records out. So, I can always debate where hip hop started.
Right.
You know. I think it was a New York thing, but I think the Bronx was more relevant, and they were able to put out records, you know, thanks to, Joey Robinson, Sylvia Robinson, the whole Sugar Hill movement, because they was discovered by Sylvia Robinson, so they were able to put out records at the time, where a lot of the groups and MCs from Queens, it was more about the sound system.
Yeah.
You know, the sound system is huge, and you know, that's what I remember when I was a little kid. I don't, you know, even though I'm related to Raheem from the Furious Five,
right.
You know, but as a kid, I really didn't know Grandmaster Flash, you know, and you know, my cousin was kind of, you know, with the Funky 4+1 before he got with Grandmaster Flash, so I kind of was, and I was out of the loop. I was, you know, I'm his younger cousin,
right,
so
right.
I was kind of out of the loop. He's already doing his thing, but me coming at as a little kid, you know, the DJs that I've seen, you know, they were playing disco, break beats, and all these other things, and we would come out, dance, have a good time to it.
So how did, for you, how did beatboxing come about? Like, if you're hearing all this, who were your influences
now,
when you started out? But then also,
right.
are they still your influences, or have that continued to grow as you grow as an artist?
I think my first inception far as musically is, you know, once Flash and the Furious Five and other groups from the Bronx started becoming more popular far as like recordings and things like that, everybody wanted to have a crew. So me being a young guy, I was a part of a crew as well. So, you know, short of having instruments or turntables or any type of other electronics, you know, we had to improvise. So I remember improvising Nile Rodgers' song when he was with Chic. Good Times, classic record, you know, used, sampled by the Sugar Hill Gang, and, you know, went to sell millions of records. But so that was one of the first records that I was, then it wasn't called beatboxing. It was just like, okay, we don't have any equipment. So what are we going to do? We're either going to bang on the table, or somebody's going to hum or harmonize,
right,
you know, the music. So that became my job at an early age to do that.
So when did you know, when did you know that this skill, this art, that you should continue to develop it? Like, you know, if you were taking the lead on it, right? Like, when did you know that?
When I heard Buffy from Fat Boys, that's when they was Disco 3.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So when I heard him, I didn't even hear Dougie Fresh at this time. I was listening to Fat Boys. I had a tape, and a lot of people were migrating from Brooklyn. Because, you know, Brooklyn and Queens is right next to each other. And they were migrating from Brooklyn to Queens. So we started to get a lot of influx of people from Brooklyn living in the neighborhood. So this one guy that lived around the corner from me, he had a tape of the Disco 3, and he played it for me. He's like, yo, you need to listen to this, because there's this guy from Brooklyn that does the same thing that you do. Like, you know? So at that point, it was like, okay, that's what's up. I'm sitting there like, okay, I'm better than this dude. You know what I mean? So, you know, back then it wasn't no internet, so you couldn't look nobody up. You just you had to listen to a tape and just imagine like
what he was doing. Yeah.
What he was doing and how he was doing it and how I was going to get to meet this guy.
Did you ever meet him?
No.
Ah.
No. Unfortunately, I never got a chance to actually meet him. I mean, in passing, because, you know, growing up in Hollis, you know, being around Run DMC, you're around a lot of people. So I didn't get a chance to really, like, hang out or chop it up or anything like that with him. But, you know, never got that shot to, like, go at him, as we would say. You know, in the modern world, you know, 2016, you know, the battle championships and beatbox battles and all that, you know, ours was grassroots.
Right.
You know, we had to go look for the person if we heard them.
Was it a big, how big of a scene was it
then? I mean, hip hop was young.
Right. But beatboxing, like, in terms of,
I mean, beatboxing was one of those rare things, and if you was nice at it, then you was kinda like the man.
Right.
You know, because it wasn't like thousands of beatboxers like it is now. You know, because, I mean, for the internet helped spread it worldwide. We didn't have that then. You know, so we just had tapes. So the tapes would generate from borough to borough, then start going out of town. You know, I would go down south for the summer, and I would hear tapes from New York. So, you know, it started, you know, getting around, but that was more underground and stuff like that. I don't think it became once the Disco 3 became Fat Boys and Dougie Fresh, you know, put out his records, that's when it became the phenomenon far as like everybody. Every group had a beatboxer. Like, it was just, you know, crazy.
When you read about, when for this interview, when you read reviews about your work, mm-hmm. When I read reviews, you know, a very common word comes up, diverse. Like, you're the most diverse beatboxer
totally,
out there.
Totally.
Do you feel that way?
Totally.
And then,
totally.
What have you done, or why did you, what was your goal? Was your goal to be the most diverse?
See, my goal was because of the music that I think what made me follow that path of diversity was actually listening to Afrika Bambaataa play, because you never knew what he was going to play. Like, you can go to a club right now, you know the top 10 songs that the DJ is going to play.
Right.
you know automatically. So it's not like Bambada would play some songs that you've never heard in your life, and he would find the break, and you sitting there like, yo. So everybody would sneak their little recorder and record what he played and go home and listen to it like, yo, where did he get this record? You know? So that's when digging came about.
Right.
Because we didn't know, because, you know, the DJ used to mark the name off the vinyl or scratch it out, so you didn't know what it was. So what I used to do, I used to go downtown to one of the record stores, and I had to beatbox the record. So the guy, oh, I know what you're talking about. So it was one of those things, you know, but Bambada used to play. It wasn't like, it wasn't just disco. It was, you know, the Incredible Bongo Band, like, you know, groups like that, like, it's not disco.
Right, it's most, you know, random.
This was random, rare, eclectic music from all over the world. It's crazy.
Yeah, a lot of people obviously know you for a boatload of your sounds. Like, what, right. You, whatever, I don't know how you do it, you create sounds out of nowhere. How does this come about? I mean, you know, like, are you walking down the street and this, you, something pops into your brain and you're like, I'm just going to do that? And then,
I mean, from jazz, everything is improv. It's like how you feel, what environment you're in, the mood. Everything is developed on what's your surroundings, you know? So that's how, you know, some of the stuff you study, you know, you listen to a record, you're trying to get a particular sound, but most of the creative stuff you come up with, it depends on where you are.
Have you ever accidentally created a sound like you were working on? I don't know,
all the time.
Being a bird.
All the time.
Like when I was in high school, I was trying to draw a tree and I drew a bird. Don't know how that happened, which is why I'm not drawing anymore. But it happened that way.
Yeah, so
yeah, I was like, whoa, look at that. I'm making yellow. It's a tweet. It's a chick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, creativity, you have no control over it, but to me it's all about how you feeling, your mood, your environment, you know, the temperature. It's a very sensitive thing. Like, I could be in a creative mood, then something happened, then I'm not, you know. It's a very emotional thing.
Is there a sound that you're kind of like right now the most proud of that you've done, or you know, or something, I mean, that you're like, you just worked the hardest.
I think the most difficult sound ever is the piano.
How do you now,
okay, when you listen to the, okay, like if you take a Rhodes, yeah. A Rhodes sound is more human because it's more warmer in depth. But a piano sound is at this octave that I haven't really heard anybody duplicate.
Right.
You know, I've tried. It's just, you know, even if you sing it, you know, like when you sing and you hold a note, like if you play a piano C, it's going to be a different C from a vocal C. But if you play the Rhodes C, it matches.
Right.
You know, so.
So that's a work in process? A process?
It's a work in process. It's one of those processes like, hey, let's try to get it before we check out of this place. You know what I'm saying?
You've obviously worked with a lot of people. You work with Bjork.
Yeah.
Talk to a quote unquote traditional producer, DJ,
right.
You know, or even the singer or MC on a song, mm-hmm. you ask them how this beat happened, and they go, well, so and so was playing me a bunch of beats one day, and we got to like the 100th beat, and I was like, that's it.
Right.
You're creating these beats from your mouth. How do you, are you, when you work with someone like that, are you doing these beats live as she's singing, or do you,
no.
she tell you what she's gonna write
she'll,
about?
She'll give me a blueprint. Like she'll play some music. She said, "I just want you to. I'm gonna strip everything away from this. So whatever you hear in this, I want you to emulate it, but your way. I don't want you to imitate it." So she's giving me free autonomy to do whatever I want. What I hear. Or what's in my mind.
And recording this as this
yeah,
happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that album was kind of...
Improv. Totally.
And did you ever go back to, I guess, correct?
No.
The improv?
No. No. It's like having a jam session.
Right.
And just go.
How do you...
Just go. Okay. We like that part. We like that part.
So it's like being able, so it's freestyling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And but not being able to, I mean, being able to take it back maybe and edit.
No, really, no big edits. No big edits. If anything, it's addition. Like they were played over. Okay, this is what we got. Oh wow, I like the way y'all did that. Let me add this to it.
And is your portion of whatever the artist is trying to express?
Yeah.
Is that, can that be read by whatever emotion you're bringing into it, or sound, or certain sounds you might
make. Yeah, so what I heard, whatever she played, I listened to the vocals and what she was singing about, so it just, you know, it predicted how I felt. You know, like, where is the line with you? You know, like, where's the boundary? That's the way I took it. Where's the boundary? So, in my mind, if I was a composer or if I had an orchestra, what would that sound like? You know what I mean? Like if I had to conduct, so I'm conducting mentally,
in your head, yeah.
So it can come out vocally.
Like,
where is the you know what I mean? Right. So it's like it's one of those things. When I heard the melody, I was like, okay, you can lock into that.
Obviously, you know, you're a person of many talents. Why have you decided to put your feet in so many genres of music? I mean,
like I said, it's like listening to Bambaataa. It's like, why do you want to put yourself in one whole particular thing? Like, I can listen to 10 DJs, and you can tell what they're gonna play. Like Bambaataa. It was something about the way he introduced music. It was always a lesson, and it always made you think. It always made you wonder where he got it from. It always made you wonder who the artist was. So I was always intrigued by who these artists are. Like, so when I started doing work with the Roots, that even opened up more doors, because now I'm working with a lot of jazz artists, a lot of jazz singers. So it just kept developing on its own, and that was the natural progression for me to follow that. You know, this the type of music that I like, period. I mean, I like all genres of music. You know, don't get me wrong, hip hop, you know, that hardcore thump, Mobb Deep, like, I love that. But at the same time, my taste and my palette for music has expanded, just because early on in my life, I was exposed to different genres of music.
When you do different genres of music, and we talk about expression.
Mm-hmm.
What does, let's say, a hip hop give you or allow you to express versus, let's say, rock and roll, or
right.
let's say versus
right.
drum and bass versus
right.
reggae?
Right.
How are each of these different for Rozelle the artist as when he tries to express himself?
See, like rock and roll, like, you know, I grew up around Run DMC, so
right.
it was able to fuse hip hop and rock together and take it to a whole nother level. So that became a part of my portfolio, you know, far as like music that I wanted to fuse with. So that's why I work with artists like Ben Harper, you know, Mike Patton, you know. So, you know, to me it was like natural because that's what I grew up listening to. That's what I was around. It was normal, you know.
We're at Brooklyn Bowl in Brooklyn, New York. Mm-hmm. You're going to go on live
right.
in a couple hours or an hour. It's Rozelle and Friends. Kind of briefly, if you could talk about what a fan will expect tonight, or they're going to listen to this afterwards, what right. you expect from a live show, what are we going to hear about the show, but also what do you enjoy when you do a live show versus a studio
mm-hmm.
recording? What does the live show allow you to do that, I mean, besides from playing with, you know, being back and forth with the fans, but what does it allow you to do versus a studio session?
I mean, the live show allows me to really go into my personality, where you actually see my personality. It's just, you know, that's who I am off and on stage. You know, but in the studio, you really can't see that.
Right.
You just hear everything. Where the stage is just another form of expression of who I am as a person. You know, so, but tonight, what the audience, what I want them to walk away with is, you know, this, you know, we having a park jam. We bringing hip hop back to the park, where, you know, the DJ's going to get on, he's going to spin, he's going to do his thing, the tricks and the techniques, and then, you know, we're going to bring out your favorite rapper. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that's how we did it back in the 80s. That's how we did it in the 90s.
And when it's Friends, Rozelle and Friends.
And Friends, yeah.
Is this the type of show that you guys know each other just so well
yeah.
that you don't...
P-Rock, really... you know, P-Rock, yeah. He produced All I Know.
Right, yeah.
And Lars Professor, me and Lars Professor have a long history because when I first started recording back in 83, a producer named Paul C., famous producer back then. He produced Eric B. and Rakim, Steezo, Mikey D. Super Lover, C. Casanova Rudd. Some really huge, you know, monumental records that helped push and elevate hip hop. Unfortunately, he passed away, but me and Lars Professor connection was him because I used to sneak in the studio after midnight, after everybody was gone, to record because I didn't have any money.
Right.
So he used to let me come in there. But he used to tell me about all these guys that he was working with. Lars Professor, Pharrell Monch, you know, Onyx, like, all these guys, like, yo, you got to listen to this. Like, so he was kind of like my intel to what was going on in the hip-hop world. I mean, I was so far outside trying to get in, but he was like my little... peephole to what was going on in the hip hop. Was like, yo, you really gotta, you know, check this guy out. This is Lars Professor. I'm like, oh wow, this is crazy. So we kind of know the same people. We both grew up in Queens. You know, we kind of like this in the same circle. You know, so
this past week, there's news that Brooklyn Bowl supposedly is getting sold and
right.
it's not going to renew its lease.
Right.
And who knows? Maybe that would change in 3 or 4 years. But what is happening to? It seems like a lot of this is happening to a lot of concerts and venues, especially in New York City. What is
yeah.
happening to the live concert scene in New York City?
I mean, it's really hard for me to answer that because you have a lot of bigger corporations and, you know, entities that are kind of buying up a lot of things and kind of controlling what music is played where, you know, so. You know, it's really hard to dictate where it's going to go. And hopefully, you know, we have somebody that kind of grew up on that music and
continue
to appreciate it and want to at least have, you know, one or two venues that cater to that. Yeah.
What's next for you? Live show?
I mean, right now I'm doing my music series. Like, I got the Rozelle and Friends. And then, you know, I moonlight as a DJ, so I play for a little older crowd. You know, older school hip hop, 80s, 90s stuff. Then I have a music series that I have an orchestra that I'm playing at the Symphony Space. So I'm trying to build that. Then I'm trying to take, like, Rozelle and Friends. I'm trying to take that to, like, Aruba and St. Croix and Europe and things like that. Because, you know, I think there's a space for it, you know. And I think there's people that want to see it, you know.
He's the great Razel.
Yeah.
Razel, we're live from Brooklyn Bowl. Thank you so much for joining me on the live here at TimHeinecke.rapstation.com.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
On these 73 keys of ivory and ebony, I swear solemnly that I forever rock steadily. People wanna know I'm elite, he right next to me, the weaponry. The secret recipe, hard to peep this, deep shit shows I eat with. Contaminated thoughts I walk the street with. I bayonet cassettes and chop beats with. This Olympic lyricism you can't compete with. Globe traveling, throwing your verse like a javelin. Things fall apart and MCs unraveling. Backstage whispering to management like, change the order, it's no way that we can rock after them. My man swore to throw like what's happening. From the latest hiatus to roots back again. Your crew practicing a cast just natural blend. They packages read care when handling this old sore shit. Batteries not included with. Matter of fact, your whole front's a reenactment. I blow your bossy ass into fragments. P5D, the New Testament. Mike Specialist, what? Yeah, 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 yeah. Black Door, I represent the Pimp Dynasty. Lyrical Click, 100% Dundee. Malik B, I represent the P5D. Guerrilla Click, 100% Dundee. Black Door, I represent the Pimp Dynasty. Lyrical Click, 100% Dundee. Malik B, I represent the P5D. Guerrilla Click, 100% Dundee. Mella Ella, Tan Tan, Punk Hawk, ready to rock while I'm out in the clouds. Seeps out, all through your block, watch the tone, play the cup. But what? You get shice, got the personality, name tried. Ready to heist, smash and grab, snatch the ice. Crush your mental device. Thought twice, should've thought once. I play for the dunce. Dialogues, I'm out of rate. Cool out, we out of state. Just blending in the gray. Give me room to ventilate. Most niggas is fraudulent. The rap sergeant, barging through your regiment. Calling your president. Hitting all targets, cause it's a cause that's lost. We're training killers when they probably Teddy Ruxpin saw. Dropping tears and still, two drops up in the bucket. Facing three hots and a cop, so yo, fuck it. If I get abducted, trapped up in the belly. Whacked up my celly, getting on like Dawn Stelly. You know the dilly on the deli and the grinning up. If I said you got a bend in your kite, then send it up. We press up on your corner with windows that send it up. Lay our props face down on the ground and give it up. Face on the ground and give it up.
Yo, yo, Black Thought, I represent the Fifth Dynasty. Lyrical Click, 100% Dundee. Malik B, I represent the P5D. Guerrilla Click, 100% Dundee. Black Thought, I represent the Fifth Dynasty. Lyrical Click, 100% Dundee. Malik B, I represent the P5D. Guerrilla Click, 100% Dundee.
Why you pose for pictures? I'm the invisible enigma. Down low, scope you off the roof like the fiddler. Cage you up in a vocal booth, you're held prisoner. Watch while I'm banging out this hot shit from Sigma. Del PA live without a DJ, and it's been that way since Sergio Valente. Yo, the roof's rolling it down is all you can say. Plus the Black Thor MC professionally. Push pen to paper like Chino Archibe. Thumping, what was your assumption? I lace your function, make it a Black Thor production. Word up, I'm on something. Stella, hold on course, I'm going blunting. Travel light and broadcast via satellite. Illa Fifth, dynamite, lyrically calculus. And it's arithmetic, hip hop metropolis. But loyal fiends copping this hot shit. You know what I'm saying? Hot shit, word up, in the fifth, hot shit, yo.
Black Thought, I represent the Fifth Dynasty. Lyrical Click, 100% Dundee.
Malik B, I represent the P5D. Guerrilla Click, 100% Dundee.
Black Thought, I represent the Fifth Dynasty. Lyrical Click, 100% Dundee.
Malik B, I represent the P5D. Guerrilla Click, 100% Dundee.
Check me out, Jeff. Come on, check me out, Jeff. Come on, check me out, Jeff. Come on, yeah, come on, come on.